All right, so yesterday we ended up talking about the three types of chest pains associated with respiratory problems. First one was pleuritic pain, that sharp pain on inspiration, very well localized. Person can point, it hurts right there. And it's a sign of pleural inflammation. Then we had pulmonary pain, which is a pain in the middle of the chest. It's often associated with coughing. So imagine when you had a really bad cold or bronchitis and you just couldn't stop coughing and your chest just burned after you're done with the fit of coughing. That's what you're talking about there. And then the last one was chest wall pain, which is actually a muscle or rib problem. All right, today we're going to start with clubbing. So clubbing is a selective bulbous enlargement of the distal segment of a digit. Huh? What does that mean? So what that means is that the nail part of a person's finger actually starts to bow outwards. So look at your finger for a second. Now, ordinarily, what you're going to find is that you have the finger comes down like this, and then the nail comes out like this, and then you've got the finger. It's a very streamlined finger, isn't it? There. Something kind of like this. Now, in clubbing, what's going to happen is that this is going to bow outwards, and it's going to look kind of like this and go straight into the nail. So you won't have that little overlap and then the nail coming out. So one of the ways we can check for clubbing is you have the person put their fingers together like this, and if you can see light between them, there's no clubbing. It's graded on a scale of 1 to 5, with 0 being none, and associated with diseases that impair oxygenation. So cystic fibrosis, which you'll learn about in your Peds OB course, pulmonary fibrosis, which is scarring of lung tissue, lung abscesses, and congenital heart diseases, also associated with COPD and lung cancer. All right, next we have sputum. Say, sputum, yes. Now, sputum is produced mucus that is being produced by the bronchi. In large amounts, we call it sputum. So, things we want to know about sputum: color, consistency, the amount, and odor. Yes, some pathogens cause sputum to smell bad. Colors can be produced by various types of pathogens. In the old days, they say, well, if it's green, it might be Pseudomonas. Well, yes, but it could also just be a rhinovirus. So, viruses can cause colored sputum just as well as bacteria. So, you can't go by color alone. Now, sputum is not the same as saliva. So what's the difference between saliva and sputum? Okay, saliva comes from the salivary glands in the mouth. Sputum comes from the bronchi. If you are required to get a sputum sample, you don't have the patient just spit in a tube. What are they going to get if you do that? Saliva. So what you want them to do is you want them to rinse their mouth first, spit, so that their mouth is relatively clean and dry. Then you want them to you want them to get that deep down body sputum. Some hospitals don't allow nurses to get sputum, to collect sputum samples anymore, because nurses didn't do a good enough job. All right. Next, we're going to talk about conditions that are caused by respiratory diseases. So the first part of this little talk was we started off with an A&P review and tied it a little bit into some patho and drugs. Then we talked about manifestations of disease. Now we're going to talk about conditions that these respiratory diseases cause. So we're going to talk about hypercapnia, hypoxemia, acute respiratory failure, pulmonary edema, aspiration, atelectasis, bronchiectasis, bronchiolitis, and on and on and on. It's going to be fun. You're going to love it. So first, we have hypercapnia. What is hypercapnia? Okay, with carbon dioxide is above 45. Okay, and what carbon dioxide are we talking about there? Well, what are the two types of carbon dioxide we can measure in the body? Because CO2 sometimes means bicarbonate. So what type are we talking about here? The gas form, which is found in the arteries. So we're talking about is the PaCO2. So PaCO2, in fact, it says it right on the slide. So the pressure, the arterial pressure of carbon dioxide is 45 or higher is considered hypercapnia. Etiology is going to be decreased drive to breathe or an inability to ventilate in response to that drive. So what are the two causes of hypercapnia in plain English? Translate that sentence into plain English for me. I can't. I don't know how to read. Okay, you want me to pick on someone, huh? All right. Nicole, translate this sentence into English for us. Okay. So what does the word etiology mean? The cause or source. So the source of high CO2 levels in the arteries is caused by decreased drive to breathe. What does that mean? The brain just says, you don't need to breathe as often. What would be some causes of that? Brain injury. What else? What's the big one we talked about? Opioids. Yes. All right. So brain injury, opioids, or as a response to why would your body hold on to too much carbon dioxide and increase acid levels? Maybe if the pH was too low or too high. So if we had metabolic alkalosis for some reason. So maybe the patient had diarrhea, lost a bunch of their bicarb. Now they're alkalotic, so the body's going to respond by decreasing the drive to breathe. Now, or, what's this next part? Translate that into English for us, Stephanie. Okay, so your brain's telling you to breathe just fine, but you just can't do it. So, Fernanda, what would be some possible causes of that? Your body's saying breathe, but you just can't do it. You can't breathe enough. Stephanie wants to help you out.
Asthma maybe.
Well, asthma definitely. What else? COPD. Give me another one. Huh? Give me another one. Pneumonia. Give me another one. Okay, pneumothorax, sure. Hyperventilation, no. That would cause the opposite problem. What else? Okay, possibly bronchitis, lung cancer, tuberculosis, a car on your chest. Okay. Anything that prevents a person from breathing normally will cause high CO2 levels in the arteries. So, you could have just read the slide because it tells you a whole bunch of good ones. So, depression of respiratory center by drugs decreases the drive to breathe. Diseases or injury to the medulla can decrease the drive to breathe. Abnormalities in spinal conduction, such as polio, can cause that. Diseases of neuromuscular junction, such as myasthenia gravis or muscular dystrophy. Thoracic abnormalities, like broken ribs, or a person who just has a congenital chest defect. Large airway obstructions. You swallowed that hot dog. Asthma, bronchitis, increased work of breathing. This is going to be things like pulmonary fibrosis and emphysema. Now, clinical manifestations. Most of the clinical manifestations of hypercapnia are because of decreased pH, which we call respiratory acidosis. So, the lungs aren't working right. You can't get enough oxygen, or you can't get enough carbon dioxide out of the body, so it starts to build up. Once it reaches 45 or higher, we call that hypercapnia, which causes respiratory acidosis. The respiratory acidosis, in turn, is going to cause electrolyte imbalance. What electrolyte imbalance specifically? Potassium what? High or low? Potassium high, which in turn will cause dysrhythmias or arrhythmias. What's the difference between a dysrhythmia and an arrhythmia? Couple letters. They're the same thing. All right, now, the other big thing is that hypercapnia will cause cerebral artery dilation, which in turn will cause increased intracranial pressure. So, hypercapnia causes dilation of arteries in the brain, which in turn is going to cause increased cranial pressure. What's that going to do to our person? Say again? He's going to make them lethargic, somnolent, go into a coma, and then die, if it's severe enough. So remember, this is an easy thing to overlook because that patient doesn't bother you. Oh, they've been sleeping all day. They're a great patient. So the two big things that we want to think of with hypercapnia. First one is respiratory acidosis, which leads to potassium problems and then dysrhythmias. Cerebral artery dilation is the other one, which leads to increased cranial pressure, which leads to somnolence, sleeping all day, and then coma and death if it's severe enough. Now, the last thing that hypercapnia will eventually cause is hypoxemia. And how does it cause hypoxemia? Say again? Okay, but why? Okay, that part of it is the gas exchange. So if you have something that just prevents you from breathing enough. But if a person has hypercapnia, what does a body usually rely on to take a breath? CO2 levels. So if CO2 levels are always high, your medulla tunes out those high CO2 levels. And then it requires hypoxemia to take a breath. So we have to remember here is that this hypoxemia is the reason the person is now breathing. So if you decide, you know what, that hypoxemia is just too low, I need to increase their oxygen levels, what can you do to that patient? Kill them. And how will they die? They'll just stop breathing, fall asleep, and never wake up. Unless you call the code. Speaking of calling codes, when I was going over the midterms, there was one question about the person who had a respiratory rate of 5 breaths per minute. What should you do? And one of the answers was call a code. And a couple of you chose call a code. And you're going to look very embarrassed when your patient is still breathing when you call the code. So the patient, you don't call a code before the patient's dead. What do you do before the patient's dead? Okay, well, in the case on the test, opioid patient had opioid toxicity, so you would, in this case, reverse the opioid toxicity. All right, so just to make sure. All right. Okay, next we have hypoxemia. Now, hypoxemia is reduced oxygenation of blood, not tissue. What's reduced oxygen in tissue called? Hypoxia. So hypoxia and hypoxemia are sometimes related, sometimes not. In this case, we're talking about low oxygen in the blood. So what we're talking about is PaO2. Etiology. You can have decreased oxygen content of inspired air. Usually, this is going to be high elevations. So we're talking about people who go up and ski. You know, they go up to 10,000 feet from sea level, and they get kind of lightheaded, and then they get elevation sickness. What we do for this person is administer oxygen. Or eventually, your body might adapt, if it doesn't die, and become polycythemic.
I've heard that athletes go up to the mountains
to train. Okay, taking your own blood in is called blood doping. You're not allowed to do it anymore. Yeah, but what they will do is train at altitude. That's why the Olympic Training Center in the United States is in Colorado Springs. Because when you train up in the mountains, your body will adapt by increasing the number of red blood cells it produces. So then if you go and compete somewhere, you know, somewhere at lower altitude, you'll have an advantage. All right, hypoventilation is the second cause, just not breathing enough. And this is usually due to hypercapnia. And then we have diffusion abnormalities. Diffusion abnormalities is when you're breathing in fine, but the oxygen can't cross over into the blood properly. This is usually going to be because of scar tissue or thickened alveoli. So, diseases like pulmonary edema, fibrosis, and emphysema can all cause diffusion abnormalities. And these are usually not associated with hypercapnia. All right, and then we have abnormal VQ ratios. What is VQ again? V stands for ventilation. Q stands for perfusion. Blood going to that area. So the most common causes, what do you think the most common cause is in the hospital? Say again? No. We already talked about some ventilation problems. So it's VQ. What's the Q stand for? Perfusion. So think along the blood side. No. What? Do we know of anything that just that prevents blood flow from going to an area of the lung? A clot. What's that called? Pulmonary embolism. Pulmonary embolism is the big one here because it happens very suddenly. And when it happens suddenly, a lot of times the patient does not necessarily become, we can't necessarily find it. We don't always know it's there. And the patient is at a very high risk of dying when they have a clot. So you always need to be thinking, if any of your patients, especially if they've had surgery, all of a sudden, I can't breathe, you need to think, could this be pulmonary embolism? All right, so we have some shunting issues. We have asthma, we have pulmonary edema, we have pneumonia. Those all cause VQ problems. Pulmonary right to left shunt. Blood is not oxygenated due to shunting. This is in things like ARDS, which we'll talk about later on, and respiratory distress of the newborn. And then we have just have dead space, which is caused by pulmonary embolism. All right, manifestations. The manifestations are usually associated with hyperventilation and respiratory alkalosis. It causes widespread tissue injury, and this is by causing hypoxia. So if you have low oxygen in the blood, that's going to cause, eventually, low oxygen in tissues and cause hypoxic damage. Hypoxemic pulmonary vasoconstriction can also happen, where the low oxygen levels causes the pulmonary arteries to just constrict. That increases the pressure. It makes it harder to pump blood through the lungs. The acute signs and symptoms are cyanosis, confusion, edema, and decreased urinary output. Yes?
Why is he got hyperventilation? Because he's having hypoxia.
This will depend. But if a person is just, if they're having this without hypercapnia, then they're gonna start breathing too much, and they'll have alkalosis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 'cause they'll be air hungry.
Okay.
Now, do you remember when I told you the story of when I went up to altitude in Colorado Springs in the Air Force Academy? Did I tell you this?
Mm-hmm.
I did. Yeah. So they want you to know, if you're going to be a fighter pilot, of which, you know, out of everyone who graduates there, the year I graduated, only 3 people got to fly fighters. But they want everyone to know what it's like to be at altitude when you lose pressure in an airplane. So if you're at 35,000 feet, there's very, very little air, oxygen in that air, because there's very little air to begin with. So if you lose pressure, you're going to become hypoxemic. And they want everyone to know what that's like. So they take you up in this altitude chamber where they basically just decrease the pressure, kind of like the opposite of a compression chamber. And you become very hypoxemic, and they ask you a series of questions. You're supposed to write down your answers, and you're just like, ooh, the colors. You can't think at all. So a person who's hypoxemic, confusion is a big one. And they're probably going to become confused before they become cyanotic. All right, next we have respiratory failure. Now, repeat after me. Carbon dioxide, oxygen, 50. Carbon dioxide, oxygen, 50. All right, if you remember those 3 things, you'll never have a problem with when someone's in respiratory failure. So, if oxygen is less than 50, or carbon dioxide is greater than 50, we call that respiratory failure. Now, how do you remember which one is greater than and which one is lower than? Well, do we want more oxygen or more carbon dioxide in the blood? So when they're switched, if either one is switched, that's respiratory failure. So now, respiratory failure does not mean the person has stopped breathing. What does it mean? They're not breathing adequately. So etiology, injury to the lungs, things like pneumonia or ARDS, airway problems like asthma and COPD, chest wall problems, or indirect damage. So a chest wall problem, bunch of broken ribs perhaps. Indirect damage would be like brain or nerve damage. Now, acute renal failure. What's so funny? I told you they're very contagious. You should never yawn. Okay. Acute renal failure. Acute respiratory failure. Here's one of the problems with those abbreviations. ARF can mean either respiratory or renal. But in this case, it's respiratory. Acute respiratory failure is primarily hypercapnic. Then, ventilatory assistance is needed. You bag the patient or you vent them. Put them on a ventilator. So, if the acute renal failure is carbon dioxide, they need to be bagged or put on a vent. If the acute respiratory failure is hypoxemic, low oxygen, then they're going to need oxygen. If they've got both, then they will need both. That's pretty simple, right? So, carbon dioxide, bag them, or put them on a vent. Now I'm going to say, if carbon dioxide, bag or vent. If it's low oxygen, give oxygen. If it's both, bag or vent and oxygen. Okay, that's pretty simple. I guarantee you, you're going to have a test question on this on the final, at least one.